ever was a seder about which it can be said that you can't see the wood for the trees, that seder would be Parshas Toldos. Simply that going through the psukim themselves, there are so many questions. A number of them seem to be serious, seem to be contradictions within the actual words themselves, that if not for the fact that we are so used to the storyline, we know how things worked out, we wouldn't know how to get through the parasha. But we know what happens, and we know, so to speak, what will happen, so we just go through it generally. What I'd like to do is to share a number of the major kashyos on the parasha, some of which are better known and some less so. Start with the one that really is behind the entire sedra. And that's as follows. Terah starts by telling us how Rivka eventually conceives after 20 years by Yisrael to Abomin Bekirbo and Vatelech Lidreshus Hashem, and she is told in no uncertain terms, Shnei Goyim Bevitnech Ushnei Beumim Mimayach Yiparezu La'oim Elon Yemot V'Rav Yavo Yitzoyim. It's very clear to her that there is going to be an absolute separation from the time they are born. One of the children is going to be a tzaddik, one is going to be a rasha, which raises the problem of Bechira, and Rabbi Yeruchim speaks about that. But either way, it's very clear to her that mime'ayach yiparedu, that they're going to separate from the moment of birth. They're going to be two completely different children. So she knows this with an absolute certainty. Why doesn't she tell Yitzchak? Why doesn't she save the next 63 years of misunderstanding, the next 63 years of confusion? Why doesn't she just tell him the truth? He's not going to believe her. She heard it in Baruch HaKodesh or from Shem Va'eva, saying them in different opinions. But either way, save all the bother, and she wouldn't have to resort to the trickery at the end with Yaakov, which produces in its wake, as the Gemara tells us, the axiom that halacha is of Seinu Yaakov. All of this could very probably have been avoided if she would have told Yitzchak the truth. But she doesn't. Why not? The Mepharshim deal with this. Rambam, the Tziv, the Da'as Sofrim, the Shishlevi has a piece on that. Why doesn't Rivka tell Yitzchak the score? That's one question. Second question, which is far better known, is that we move forward to the time that the brachas are about to be given. And Yitzchak is going to, as we know, his intention is to give the brachas to Esau. So Rivka is convincing Yaakov to go and get the brachas. Yaakov is hesitant. But the question is, how is he convinced at the end? How is he convinced to take these brachas? Simply, whereas nowadays, a bracha is a form of, perhaps we can say, a powerful tefillah. Person goes to a tzaddik because they need a certain request, whether it's for health, children, for an offer, whatever it should be, for ruchnias. And the person to whom they are making this request is essentially making a tefillah on their behalf. Be made tanach. A bracha was focused on the particular individual. It was relevant to the person it was addressed to. If you have a look at Parshas Vayechi, look at Parshas Vezeis HaBracha, the brachas are addressed to the person only, and they are there, the word bracha clearly indicates, which means to increase. It is either to be maitzi mikoach lapayel, to bring out the potential that it already exists within the person, or to increase their capability within a certain area. That's the purpose of a bracha b'yimei atanach. If that's the case, if it's individually addressed, then what is the purpose of Yaakov going to get Esav's brachas? Forget the problem that Ulay Yimisheni Ovi, that maybe he'll be caught. Forget all of that. The problem is, it's not relevant to him. It won't work. It's the wrong voltage. There'll be no purpose in taking these brachas. And therefore, how can Rivka convince Yaakov to go for the brachas? As a corollary to that question, as a subset to that question, Yaakov is told by Rivka, don't worry about the fallout. Don't worry about the problem of Yitzchak discovering the truth, because Olai kilalosha b'ni. If anything goes wrong, I'll take the heat. Olai kilalosha b'ni, says Rivka, I will take the kilalos upon myself. How does that work? Besides for the fact that the Gemara tells us that kilalas tzaddik afilu b'chinam hiba, afilu al tanai hiba, which means that once the tzaddik utters the klala, it's going to happen, and it can't be retracted. And therefore, the concept of I will accept the blame will come too late. Beyond that, what happens if the klala is in an area which doesn't apply to Rivka? How can she reassure Yaakov that, don't worry, whatever happens, I will take the klala? As a subset to why he actually went for the brachas in the first place. Third question is the best known question, and that is, how far wrong can we assume that Yitzchak went? How can we assume that Yitzchak had no idea what was going on? Yes, he was blind, and yes, things were hidden from him, but how much could have been hidden from him? Imagine Rabbi Akiva Eger has two sons, one of whom, whenever he's giving share, is an Ishtam Yeshivalim, he turns up to share, and the other one's never there. How long would it take Rabbi Akiva Eger to figure out the nature of his two children? We're talking about Yitzchak Avinu. Yaakov Kamenetsky writes that Avraham Avinu opened a yeshiva with the Midah Chesed, and he had many talmidim, hundreds, thousands, we don't know. Yitzchak opened the yeshiva, the Midas HaGvura, the Midas HaDin, which was his Midah, and he only had one Talmud, Yaakov. The only Talmud in his yeshiva, it was Kedar, to open the yeshiva, just for Yaakov, quite obviously. So he had one Talmud in his yeshiva. He didn't know that Yaakov was an Ishtam Yeshiva Eholim. It doesn't make any sense. However much could have been hidden from him, surely, the Gala Tefach Machaseth Bachayim, how much could have been hidden from Yitzchak Avinu? Doesn't make any sense. And finally, the kasha, which only really arises at the end of the Sedra. As we know, Yaakov gets the brachas. Therefore, Yaakov exits stage left, Esav enters stage right, Esav turns up with his food, and he brings it to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak says, who are you? Who am I? I'm Esav. Come to bring you the food that you asked. So it says, Vayechra Yitzchak Harada Gedol Avnoid. Yitzchak now is not sure. Me, Esav, who thought, what's going on? And he tells Esav, I've given the brachas away already. What's Esav's reaction? Vayitzak tzaoko gdeila umora. He breaks out. He realizes the value of the brachas that he has lost. And he begs his father for a bracha. Ha bracha achasi lecha avi. You've only got one bracha. Halayotzaltali bracha. Yeah, I'm sure you've still got something for me. And Yitzchak says, sorry, nothing there. I've given it all away. All the brachas. I've got nothing left to give you. There is nothing there. And Esau's tears have an enormous effect beyond the effect of the hatred that it will create between Esav and Yaakov there and then. The Medrash on the words Vayitzak Tzaoka Gedola Umora says Vahichon Nifra, where were Klal Yisrael paid back for the pain that they caused Esav? So the Bali Kriya here will no doubt be familiar with virtually the same words, except it's a Zayin instead of a Tzadi. It says Vayizak Tzaoka Gedola Umora in Megillas Esther. That's what the Medrash says, Vahichon Nifra in Megillas Esther. And it's not the only link between this week's Sedra and Megillas Esther, because really Megillas Esther is the continuation of this week's Sedra. Once that Esav of Sein Eliyakov has been established, then in Golus the struggle they will have is in Megillas Esther. The setting is that it's quite clear that Yitzhak is unable to give Esav any brachas, and Esav leaves in a situation of despair. But Esav leaves, Rivka understands what's going on, she tells Yitzhak, Yaakov has to get married, she's intending sending him to Paddan Aram. So Yaakov at the end of the Sedra comes to take his leave of Yitzhak. Yaakov comes to say goodbye to Yitzhak. And what happens? Yitzhak suddenly comes out with a host of brachas. Kel Shaka Yivorecha Yitzchak V'Yafrecha V'Yarbecha. Sukkim we are familiar with from V'Yitzenecha. V'Yitzenecha is Birkas Avraham. He gives him Birkas Avraham. He gives him Birkas Ha'oret. Suddenly, Yitzchak has got a host of brachas to give away. 20 minutes ago, Esav is begging for a bracha. Nothing. At the end of the Sedra, no problem. You want a bracha? How many brachas do you want? They're all available. What's going on? So, just briefly to go over the question. First question is, why didn't Rivka simply tell Yitzchak the truth? It was a simple matter of telling him at some stage in 63 years what's going on. Or if need be, at the final or the closing moment of the issue, tell him then, just before she sends Yaakov. Why didn't you tell him the truth? Why did Yaakov want to go for a bracha that isn't addressed to him? And how was he reassured that nothing would happen to him? How was he reassured that somehow Rivka would take the heat for the brachas, for the clothes? Thirdly, how can we assume that Yitzhak was so misguided that he didn't understand what was going on in his own household? He didn't see Yaakov as the Ishtam Yeshiv Eholim. And finally, why did he withhold from Esav a bracha when he still had the potential, the possibility, the capability of giving him a bracha, as we see at the end of the Sedra? So the Pesach, understanding all of this from a macro perspective, is the idea that each of the Ovos perfects a particular middah insofar as it is humanly possible to do so. Each one of the Ovos not only has nisyonos in their life but reacts to it with their middah and perfects a particular middah, as we know. Avraham is Midas HaChesed, Yitzchak is Midas HaGvura, Yaakov is Midas HaEmes. And in this week's Sedra, Yitzchak and Rivka are perfecting that Midah of Gvura. Yaakov, quite obviously, is perfecting the Midah of Emes. Much written about that. That's the best known aspect of this parasha, how he tells Sheker, even though he is the middle of MS, the definition of MS is reality, not just simply truth. But the perfection of the middle of Gvura is what Yitzchak and Rivka are doing throughout this Sedra. That's the case. Yitzchak's perspective on the situation was that he knew quite clearly that Yaakov was an Ishtam Yeshiv Eholim. And he knew that Yaakov would be the person who would be sitting, learning Torah. However, there needs to be a second half to this. In Kemach, in Torah. There needs to be the chelik of the person who will provide for the person who's learning Torah, who will protect the person who's learning Torah. There has to be a shutfus. There has to be a partnership in what's going on here. And somebody needs to be doing the other half. Somebody needs to be the one who takes on the role of what looked like Esau's natural role. The person who was the hunter. And therefore, Yitzchak knew Yaakov's value. The one piece of the story, the one piece of the puzzle that he was missing, was the fact that Esau had long ago given up on the idea that he was going to be a shutef to Yaakov. That's the piece of the puzzle that he is lacking, that Yaakov's potential is fully aware of. And therefore, there was no habamina that Yitzchak was ever going to give Birkas Avram or Birkas Haaretz to Esau. It's not shayach to him. You wouldn't know which way up to hold it. You wouldn't know what to do with it. It's not shayach to Esau, the bracha of Birkas Haaretz or Birkas Avram. And therefore, hello, absolutely bracha, it's not going to help how much Esau begs. It's not relevant to Esau. That for sure is Yaakov's bracha. And that was never the intention of Yitzchak. He was never that naive, chas v'shalom, to believe that all the potential lay within Esau, and that Yaakov had no potential whatsoever. But he thought there was going to be a shutfus. Except that the shutfus wasn't going to happen. Esau had no intention. This wasn't Rebbe and Antoninus. This was Esau and Yaakov. And therefore what happened is that Yaakov had to take on two halves. He had to do the job of two people. And therefore, we understand, at least to a large degree, the answers to questions 4 and 3 and 4. We understand how Yitzchak could have been misguided. He wasn't misguided. He didn't know the potential of Esau. Esau had the ability to become the provider, to become the protector. In fact, the middle that Esau had was the middle of Gevura. The middle of being the Gibbon. He had the ability to hunt, and that's why Yitzchak stresses before he gives him the bracha. Why didn't he just call him in and give him the bracha? Why did he make him run around and bring him food? And Yitzchak stresses, bring me food, kasher or havti. Suddenly Yitzchak is interested in Gashmias. And he tells him exactly how to hunt and what to do. Just give him the bracha. Because Esau needs to demonstrate that he's using the midah of Gevura l'tayv. And then the hashpah of bracha will take place. Then the tzinor of bracha is opened, and he is royal to be given the bracha of Yitzchak Cholekim mitav ha'shamayim mishmanei ha'aretz yavducha amim. He deserves getting that bracha if he uses the midah of Gevura where it's supposed to be used. And he had the potential. Some of the Poroshim explained that Esau could have been greater than Yaakov. Oshaken Oshalah, I mean, there are obviously different opinions on the matter. But either way, Esau had tremendous potential. And he could have used that potential. And he could have received the brachas. And his potential would have been definitely in the middle of Yitzchak, in the middle of Gevura. But it didn't work out. So that Yitzchak was not misguided. Yitzchak was spot on, as far as the information that he had to hand, and therefore he tried to bring out the potential of Gevura within Esau, the potential which was really there. So we understand Yitzchak. We also understand why at the end of the Seder he gives all these other brothers to Yaakov, because they belong to Yaakov. We can also understand now how those brothers can actually be given to Yaakov instead of Esau. We find Yitzchak not really knowing who's who. He doesn't know who he's giving the brachas to. Hakol kol Yaakov, ha'yudayim yudei Esav. So if Yitzchak is unaware who he's giving the brachas to, why doesn't he carry on cross-examining whoever's standing in front of him? He expresses his uncertainty, the fact that he's not sure who's standing in front of him, And his solution is to give him the bracha. The solution should be carry on asking questions. Because at that moment in time, it doesn't matter who it is. Yitzchak understands that the bracha can be chal on this individual, whoever they are. They have the achiles to take this bracha. So he gives it to them, irrespective of who they are. When he finds out who they are, he says, Gam baruch here. He should remain with the bracha. But he's able to give it to them at the time, because irrelevant of who they are able to absorb the bracha. And in fact, that's why when Yaakov is about to go in, what is he worried about? Ula yimisheni avi. Perhaps my father will touch me. Why isn't he worried about the fact that he's going to have to speak to Yitzchak? So, fine. The Rosh say they were twins, they had similar voices. But the main problem should have been, not how likely was it that Yitzchak would touch Yaakov. Maybe. But he would definitely speak to him. Why isn't he worried about that? And he says that my brother is Ish Seor and he is Ish Cholok. What he is expressing is not the physical differences between Yaakov and Esau. What Yaakov is worried about is that he is an Ishtom Yeshiv Aholim. How is he supposed to become the person of the field, the hunter, without it destroying him being an Ishtom Yeshiv Aholim? That's what he's worried about. He says, how can I possibly do two jobs which are sometimes contradictory? And Rivka says to him, no problem. Because the way you will become the Ish Seor is externally. You will wear the garment, but your mahus will never change from being an Ish Tom Yeshiva Holim. That's who you are. You will take on external garments, but that's not who you are. You'll be able to do it. And she says, Olai kilolos kobani. The Gaon explains that Olai is a leitrikon. Rosh HaKavis, Esav Lovon Yesef. Those are the three things you will have to contend with in life. Yitzchak is not going to be part of the problems that you are going to face. And therefore, don't worry what will happen there with Yitzchak. She's not saying, I will take upon myself the klolos. She's saying there won't be any klolos. And the Gaon proves this in Parshas Vayigash. When the brothers want to take Binyamin down to Yosef, she says, or rather, Yaakov says, Yosef einenu v'Shimon einenu, there's Binyamin tikachu, olai hoyu kulona. What does it mean? Olai hoyu kulona. They have already been. So it's gone, yeah, olai is Esav, Lavan, and Yosef has already taken place. How can I be put through more nisyenus? I was reassured that this was never going to be my chelek. And obviously that's the connection to Megillas Esther once again. Because when Esther tells Mordechai, Knesset Kol Yehudim, she says, Mitzumu olai. If you want to undo this threat, then the farce has to be olai. That's what you have to undo, Esav, Lavan, and Yosef. So that Yaakov is now reassured that he can go for the brachas. Obviously, this is straying into next week's sedra. If he takes two sets of brachas, he needs two wives. He now needs to marry Leah and Rachel. And we now understand the Medrash that says, on the words, Ve'ena Leah Rakos, the Medrash says that Leah was going to marry Esav. It wasn't that, when she was a child in the playground, somebody pulled one of her pigtails and said, you're going to marry Esau. Right? That's not what's going on. That's, kindergarten Torah. That's not what's going on. What really happened is that Leah was royal for Yosef. That was her potential. Esau. That was her potential. And have a look at her children. All of her children are fulfilling that role. Reuven is the Bechor, Pishnaim. Shimon and Levi, they wipe out the city to protect their own family. Yehuda is the melech. Zvulun is the trader. Right? Yisachar is the obvious exception because Yisachar and Yosef for that. Next week, etc. But either way, all of Leah's children are the Esav type child, the positive Esav type child. The Gevura of Esav used positively. So he now needs two wives because he's got two sets of brachas. So we understand why Yaakov gets these brachas. We understand where Yitzchak is in this parasha. We understand why the Birkas Avraham was only going to go to him. What we are left with is trying to understand why Rivka didn't tell Yitzchak. It would have been so simple. There's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which is Mishnah in Daf Pei Tes, which says, HaKovish Nevo'ofrei is Chayv Misa B'nei Shemayim. A novi who doesn't relate the nevuah that they've been given is chayav misa. How do we know? Yoina. Yoina runs away and he's chayav misa. What about the opposite? What about a novi who's given a nevuah and told that they're the only one to whom the nevuah is addressed and nobody else can know about it? Are they allowed to relate it to others? Where do we see this? End of Parshas Lech Lecha. Avraham Avinu is told clearly by a Kodesh Baruch Hu that he's going to have a son, and the son should be called Yitzchok. What? 3-4 days later, some malachim turn up, and they tell Sarah, essentially, that she's going to have a child, and the child's going to be called Yitzchok. And what's Sarah's reaction? A Titzchak Sarah Bekirba Leimah. Sarah doesn't believe it. She can't believe she's going to have the child. But one second, surely her husband told her, right? They've been married for decades. They've wanted to bring a child into this world more than anything else. And Avraham has been in possession of this piece of information for 3, maybe 4 days. He hasn't told her? He hasn't told Sarah they're going to have a child by his husband? It's not possible. It is. Because the nevuah was addressed to him and him alone. It's not his to discuss with others. We find this in a number of places. We find it. Yitzchok doesn't tell Yaakov when he knows that Yosef has been sold into slavery. If he's not part of the Shvur, it's very difficult to understand. He watches Yaakov suffer for 22 years. Well, he doesn't watch him suffer for 22 years because he died 12 years into it. So he watches Yaakov suffer for 12 years. Doesn't tell Yaakov the truth. Doesn't make any sense. But the Nevuah was addressed to Rivka alone. She did not have the right to tell it to anybody else, and therefore the Torah says Vayomer Hashem Lo, not Vayomer Hashem Shnegoim Vavitnech. Okay, so Rivka couldn't give over the Nevuah. Why not? Why does she have to keep the Nevuah? Because here we see Midas HaGevurah. It took almost superhuman strength to spend 63 years knowing the Emes and seeing Esau being favoured over Yaakov. The Pasuk tells us this. This is not the admission of some psychoanalyst. The Torah tells us that Yitzchok loves Esau. And she knows he's going to be a Rasha, because Yaakov is going to be the Tzaddik. And she watches for 63 years. Do you know what Gvuras HaNefesh it takes to do nothing, to say nothing, because you're not allowed to? The inner discipline that takes, almost superhuman. That's perfecting Midas HaGevurah. How does Yitzchok perfect Midas HaGevurah? Because after living a mistake for 63 years, he is suddenly confronted by the fact that Esau will not do his part of the deal. How does he react? How would we react? If publicly, we've been telling people what a tzaddik Esau is, and everyone possibly has been laughing behind our backs, and suddenly you're confronted with the MS. Would we have the strength of character to say, I've been wrong all of my life until now? The Zohar says that twice in Yitzchak's life he trembled. Which, once on the Akedah, once here, which of the two was greater? The fact that here it says, Charod Gedola Av Ma'oi, this one was a greater problem for him. The problem of nearly being swayed by the gifts of Esau. And to admit and say Gam Baruch Yeh, to think how much goes into those three words, how much it takes to say Gam Baruch Yeh. It would be rare to find a scientist or a politician who propounds a theory or a policy which turns out to be complete shtuyot, and 20 years later they find out that it is totally off track. They are very unlikely to publicly admit their mistake. Very unlikely. Gam Baruch Yeh, the amount of gevurah that goes in to saying those three words for 63 years. Almost superhuman. That's perfecting Midas HaGevurah. One last little piece. All the others experience a period of childlessness. It's very interesting to note that their wives reacted in keeping with the midah that they exemplified. When Sarah is childless, undoubtedly she davened for a child. The Torah doesn't tell us that. The Torah tells us that Sarah says, take Hagar as a wife. It is the supreme act of chesed to give away your position as being the wife of Avram, Abkadekasa, Torah tells us. Now take up Gevirat Bei now. That after a while, who's Sarah? But Sarah says, Ulai Ibone Mimena. That's the ultimate act of chesed. That's how Sarah reacts to being childless. How does Rivka react? Internal searching. Tefillah. Avodah Shebelev. Her reaction, as described by the Torah, is in keeping with Midas HaGevurah, because that's what she is trying to perfect. What she does perfect. 20 years of tefillah. And Yaakov and Rachel, in the middle of Emeth. Rachel says, Hovali bonim b'mayin meisot noichim. What, Yaakov didn't know she didn't have children? But that's the reality. I'm expressing the reality as it is. That's the Emeth. If I don't have children, meisot noichim. Because somebody without children, chashuv kameis. That's the middle that they are perfecting. The way the Torah describes what they are going through is describing not only in the science, but the fact that they are perfecting a particular middle. And through this week's Sedra, the fact that we nowadays have the ability to work on the middle of Gevura, of inner strength, of inner discipline, is because the Ovis implanted that in us, and we now have those koichos, which they had to go through all those nisyonos for. They have given over those koichos to us.